Thank you. So I want to start with the most important slide, which is the outline of the talk, because the outline of the talk contains much more than I can possibly talk about in an hour. And therefore, first of all, I'll say a bit about what could be in the talk, and then I'm going to allow the audience to choose which bits of the talk they'd like me to concentrate on, because I'm not going to try and just get through all of it in an hour. So,
you want us to vote on these things?
Yeah, well, the introduction is compulsory, as is something on the simplified Colombo algebra. So the introduction is going to explain why it is in fact possible to multiply distributions, despite what is popularly thought. The simplified Colombo algebra will demonstrate that it can be done, but it's not without problems the way it actually is done in the simplified Colombo algebra. The full Colombo algebra tells you how you can do it in such a way that you have lots of nice properties. The nice properties that you have is that the smooth functions are in there as a subalgebra. It's associative, commutative, has all the sort of usual things that you want, and that distributions sit in there as a linear subspace. Now, the way that Colombo did things, it relied actually quite heavily on the linear structure on Rn. And what I've been principally responsible for, together with some mathematicians in Vienna, you're stretching, which is Michael Kunzinger and Roland Steinbauer, they're the people I mostly work with, is generalizing this idea so you can do it actually on manifolds. Not only can you talk about real-valued functions on manifolds, but you can talk about generalized functions between manifolds, and that's actually something you can't even hope to do anything like using the classical theory of distributions. Because if you simply work in charts, something which is a distribution in one chart is not a distribution in another. And you can go on and you can look at generalized tensor fields, and this enables you to develop generalized differential geometry. And once you've got generalized differential geometry, you can start looking at generalized solutions of Einstein's equations or generalized space-times. And the generalized space-times come in two flavors. The first flavor was one which historically came first, and I actually haven't been responsible for that. That's basically work done by Herbert Balasan and some others. And what that does, it looks at things like Schwarzschild, or it looks at Kerr. In fact, it looks at anything that you can describe in Kerr-Schild form, and you can actually start looking at those as distributional solutions of Einstein's equations. So I find that quite interesting, but I don't really agree with it, because it relies on writing down the metric in a particular form. The stuff I've been involved with is looking at using Colombo algebras to describe weak singularities. The typical sort of weak singularity I have in mind are cosmic strings, but they can actually be cosmic strings which have a bit more badly behaved curvature than just something with a straight conical deficit. They can actually have mild curvature singularities of certain sorts. The other thing that you can do with these Colombo algebras is you can look at a thing called generalized hyperbolicity. Generalized hyperbolicity was an idea that Chris Clark came up with, which is to think of singularities not as obstructions to extending geodesics, but you really like to think of them as obstructions to solutions of Einstein's equations, except when we started on this, we didn't have the technology to do that. So we looked at them instead in terms of obstructions to solutions of test fields. So if you look at something like a scalar field, you're looking at the wave equation on some singular space-time background and seeing if you can extend it and what are the obstructions to extending. And the other thing is you can look at, which I actually haven't got any transparencies on, I spoke about this a bit at GL17, with generalized geodesics. Again, within this theory, you can write down differential equations, you can give theorems about existence and uniqueness of differential equations, and you can talk about generalized geodesics in certain circumstances. And one of the ideas behind this is to try and prove the singularity theorems with lower differentiability than is conventionally done. So that's the kind of what you're hoping to do. So, what would you like to have?
1, 2, 3, 4, 6, 8.
1, 2, 3, 4.
So you.
1, 2.
No, 3 was a full polymorph.
Yes. Oh, 3. Sorry.
4.
4, yeah. This one?
Yes. 8.
Right. Any other? Anyone else wants a vote? Or else it's a.
I think this should be enough for now, right?
Yeah, but we can. You can. You might want to outvote him. You might want some stuff on weak singularities. No.
Well,
okay.
I'm interested in the last one as well, but
the last one I haven't. I can talk to you about after.
Okay. Good. So let's do this.
Okay. So I need that to remind me what little packets I want to. So.
Can we choose a different topic altogether?
So if you want to look at some of the detailed mathematics of this, it's in this paper here, by the way, just in case I don't, which is Global Theory of Algebras of Generalized Functions. And that's just generalized functions on manifolds. The extension to maps between manifolds and tensor fields, in a way, isn't that profound. So the key mathematical ideas are in this thing, in this paper here.
And that's also on the net?
Yes, it's on the net. And I've already managed to... Ah, there it is. Okay. So I've already cut one slide. So, historically, there were two sort of mathematical approaches to distributions. One was one where you think of, it's the way we often teach them to our students, we think of them somehow, a generalized function, as a sequence of smooth functions. And instead of just thinking of a single sequence, you actually have to think of equivalence classes of sequences, and you think of, look at equivalence classes, if the difference between them tends to zero as n tends to infinity for all phi, for phi in some suitable space. I don't want to go into that. Whereas the other approach to distributions is the one that was pioneered by Sobolev and Schwarz, where you're thinking of them as dual to a space of test functions. In fact, there's a bit more to it than that, because you want to have some notion of topology on this space. And if you want to put a topology on the space of distributions, you have to start looking at families of seminorms and stuff like that. And actually, it turns out this is really not particularly much easier than doing it this way. Nevertheless, this is the way typically modern mathematicians describe distributions. And I think that's largely because of the result of Schwarz, who said it wasn't possible to multiply distributions. And what was very nice about Schwarz's impossibility proof was he didn't rely on any particular mathematical structure. He just simply took an example. And the example he took is a thing that you get by integrating the Heaviside function. You get this thing here which goes along and then goes up. 45 degrees. And he used the result that if you multiply this thing by the Heaviside function, you get the same thing. And then he calculated the second derivative using two different ways. And on one hand, he got it was the zero distribution, and on the other hand, he got it was the delta function. And then he says, well, if you want the delta function to be non-zero, then something has gone wrong here. And you can write a theorem. You look at what goes into this explicit example, and you say it's not possible to have an associative commutative algebra which contains the distributions d prime, which the derivatives are linear and satisfy Leibniz. It's the usual derivative on distributions, and the product coincides with the product for continuous functions. So that's the Schwarz result. And I'll put this up. And that's actually another result which superficially looks the same. Anyone spot the difference? Paul probably knows because he's heard the talk before, some of it. Does anyone else know?
One says you can, the other says you can't.
Did you read it carefully? Because the Schwarz result, people don't read always as carefully as they should. Do you want me to show it to you again? Read the last two words. And read them there. Schwarz wanted the usual product for continuous functions to work. And actually, I think that's a bit of an unreasonable thing, because what you're planning on doing is you're planning on being able to differentiate these things as often as you like. And so by differentiating, you're very quickly going to get into the realm of distributions. We know from the structure theorem you can always represent any distribution by differentiating functions of finite differentiability. So in fact, it's much more natural to make a distinction between the smooth functions, which are stable under differentiation, than it is to assign a special role to continuous functions, which is what happens in the Schwarz result. So I would claim this is a much more reasonable set of conditions than the Schwarz one. It's a bit strange for us to think that we're going to have a theory where when you multiply functions together, it isn't just simply the pointwise multiplication. But that's actually what you get out of this. That's the Colombo theory. So that's if you want to see already what the negative problem with Colombo is, if you're working with functions of finite differentiability, you embed them into the algebra, that does not commute with multiplication.
So when you're saying smooth, you mean C infinity?
C infinity. Smooth means C infinity. Yeah. So that's just sort of to set you on your way. So just in case, so when I've been talking about differential algebra, I mean these things. So that you can add them together with constants in front of them, you can multiply them pointwise, you can differentiate like this, and you've got the Leibniz law. There's no mention of composition there, and I'll come back to the question of composition later on, but in fact the Colombo algebra does allow composition. That was not obvious from Colombo's original definitions, but it was a byproduct of looking at Colombo algebras which consider maps between functions. So that's the setting.
Can I interrupt you? Because this issue of being able to compose, if you want to do Colombo algebras and manifolds,
yes,
you might want to start with a smooth manifold, and therefore composition would only be with smooth maps. That's what you have in mind? Or you want to actually compose Colombo objects?
Well,
you want to compose with a smooth map or smooth function, not with a distribution.
No, actually, I'm going to compose with Colombo objects.
Right, but I mean, from a strictly logical point of view, is this necessary to do manifold, or it's just a bonus that you get?
You pretty well, if you want to do classical differential geometry on manifolds, you do pretty much, you need something a bit like that. So, for example, if you're evaluating, I give an example later on, but it may be one of the bits I cut out, but evaluating the norm of a generalized vector, which is tangent to a generalized curve, using a generalized metric, and then you want to differentiate that and use the usual formula, the derivative of that is twice x, twice 2g x x dot. If you look carefully at what you do, you actually need these, you need to be able to compose in certain ways. You don't need composition is not, doesn't have to be unrestricted, but certain sorts of composition you certainly need. So let me just try and say how it's done. So the basic idea is you represent distributions as a one-parameter family of smooth functions. So you're looking, you're back in some fairly familiar territory. You've got one-parameter family, f epsilon of x. I'll use my second. Does this work? But straight away you have a problem. Sorry. That if you do that, can you guys, would you? Well, I'll read it out. You've got too many representations of essentially the same function. Okay? If you just try and represent something like a delta function, we know there's all kinds of ways you can write a delta function as a limit of smooth functions. Right? So if you go down that road, it's absolutely hopeless. So what's the solution to that? The solution is to work with some equivalence class of functions, just as Mikosinski did. So you need to work with some equivalence class of f epsilon. And the equivalence class says that the differences between them is negligible. Okay, so let's look at some objects that might live in this algebra. First of all, if we start with a smooth function, we can embed it in the algebra simply as the constant function, which doesn't have any epsilon dependence. That's nice and smooth. So that's the embedding of smooth functions. If we've got a integrable function, we can do something which is quite familiar. We take a convolution with a smoothing kernel. Actually, this is anti-convolution. So we've got f tilde epsilon x is f x plus epsilon phi epsilon of y dy. Now this phi sub epsilon of y is some smoothing kernel which is going to become the delta function as epsilon goes to zero. And later on we'll actually work with a general class of such functions. That's what we'll have to do when we come to manifolds, but Colombo didn't do it that way. He did it this way. I'm working in 1D. So if this is, this phi here has integral 1, if you look at phi of y over epsilon, 1 over epsilon, what you're doing is you're squashing it in, and you're making, stretching it up. So you're preserving the integral is equal to 1, but you're just making it more and more peaked. Now this other condition, so that's this condition here, this other condition, I want all the moments of phi to vanish. Now if you were working with functions of compact support, you'd be in trouble, because you couldn't have A and B, but if in the space of rapidly decreasing functions, you can satisfy A and B. So you can make all the moments vanish, the integral be 1, and the thing be rapidly decreasing at infinity. So that's something you can do, you're working the Schwarz space, you can do that. And now what we do is we just change the variable in this integral like this. So y of epsilon is z, that gets rid of this. And now So you've got a smooth function, so you've got two different representatives. You've got the one that comes as the f hat epsilon, that's the constant embedding, you don't care about the epsilon dependence, and you've got the second one that comes from the smoothing kernel. And you'd certainly want those two different things to be the same. Okay, if you embed a smooth function, either via a convolution or as the constant, you want it to be the same. So you want this thing here, this is your candidate for something negligible. And you just expand this thing here. So you can put this under the integral, because the integral of phi is 1, so that's this term. Now you expand this in a Taylor series, you get this plus a remainder term, and because of the moment condition, this term here vanishes, and you're simply left with the remainder term, and since it's smooth, you can expand to any power you want, so it goes like order epsilon to the m plus 1 for arbitrarily large values of m. So that tells you that d epsilon of x vanishes faster than any power, and in fact the same is true of the derivative. So that tells you, more or less, what your first guess of these negligible functions is. So those are your negligible functions. That's just saying they vanish faster than any power of epsilon on any compact set. So this symbol here, if you don't know, it just means it's on a K's compact subset. And you can, I've done it in Rn, so you can take as many, this is a multi-index for derivatives. But that doesn't quite work. The problem is, this space here, N, is not an ideal. We want the thing to be an ideal because we want, when we look at products of functions, right? If you've got F plus something which is negligible and G plus something is negligible, when you multiply them, they give F times G plus something negligible. And that needn't be the case, because if you multiply it by something that blows up like mad when epsilon goes to zero, you're in trouble. So, we have to do this. We reduce the space that we started with to ones of moderate growth. So we can, this does make sense.
What is K in the first line?
What?
What is K?
K is a compact subset of Rn. So the moderate growth are just the ones that diverge at worst polynomially in inverse powers of epsilon. So they blow up like 1 over epsilon to some power. So if you multiply one of these by something negligible, you get something negligible. So we can now actually look at this simplified algebra, and in fact you can localize these to open sets on Rn. That all goes through. So that's how you get started. We've got round the Schwarz impossibility proof.
What is moderate function?
So a moderate function is something which is allowed to... So the epsilon dependence of a moderate function is such that it can blow up like some power of 1 over epsilon, some finite power. Okay. So if you multiply something which goes to 0 faster than any power by something which goes by some power, you get something which goes to 0.
And with respect to x, they're just C infinity.
Yes. Yes, yes. Yeah, because it's a subset. Well, okay, it's your basic space is smooth functions. By the way, one thing I didn't mention is that you don't have to put any topology on the epsilon dependence. Epsilon's sort of a parameter in there. You don't have to worry about smoothness with respect to epsilon or anything like that. It's just simply in there as a parameter. X, everything has to be smooth in X, but can have totally disgusting behavior if you like in epsilon. Although again, that changes when we do it on manifolds. Okay. Well, we're not done with our problems yet, because what we've done is we've constructed something which gets around the Schwarz result, but it's not entirely satisfactory. You see, I said the key thing was that we wanted to have the have a distinction between smooth functions and finite differentiability functions. But at least if the function is continuous, what Schwarz did was in some sense reasonable. It's what we ordinarily do. So for continuous functions, multiplication doesn't commute with the embedding. And the way we get around this is we introduce another equivalence relation. So this is one of the features of the Colombo construction. And it's one of the features which will turn out to be quite important in terms of understanding what these things mean physically. So first of all, let me just say, we talk about association between two generalized functions, f and g. And what we say is they're associated if, when you multiply them by some test function, this psi is a smooth function of compact support, you integrate it and look at the limit as epsilon goes to zero, then you get the same answer. And you can also talk about a generalized function being associated to a distribution if, when you apply a test function to psi to f and you look at the limit as epsilon gets to zero, that's the same as applying that test function to t. Okay. Now, in fact, if you look at the Colombo algebra modulo this association, that is precisely the classical theory of distributions. So if you just factor by this, you've got back ordinary distributions. And what you get out of this, so you see, if you've got continuous functions f and g, you embed them in the algebra, you look at the pointwise product. Once they're in the algebra, you can always take the pointwise product because they're smooth. Then that's associated to the thing that you get by taking the pointwise product as continuous functions and embedding. Okay. If you've got associated objects, then that's preserved by differentiation. So differentiation preserves, association is preserved under differentiation. And if you've got a generalized function and you multiply it by something that's smooth, this f here is smooth, then that's the same as, or if u and v are associated. In particular, one of the things you can do with distributions is you can multiply distributions by smooth functions. So this says that this notion of association of a generalized function with a distribution is preserved by multiplication by smooth functions and differentiation, which are the two things you'd want, again, to make it agree with everything you have with the classical theory of distributions. So what I'm trying to convince you of, this actually contains within it the classical theory of distributions. And this is one of the features I like about it. It's not one, a lot of theories where you multiply distributions, you have to abandon stuff that you have in the classical theory. You don't have to abandon anything from the classical theory here. If you work at the level of association, everything's okay. By the way, not everything that's in the Colombo algebra is associated to a distribution. Okay? So that's a... You might think from this that everything is associated to a distribution. That's not true. Okay. Well, we're not done with our problems. And the next problem is really, in a sense, a crucial one. If I've got a distribution and I embed it to get this thing f sub epsilon, the way I was doing the embedding was via this convolution. And so that the answer I get is going to depend on the smoothing kernel I have in my convolution. And Colombo's answer to this was really quite amazing, it seems to me. He said, well, let's embrace that. What we're going to do is we're, from the very start, going to allow these smoothing kernels to be arguments of our generalized functions. So our generalized functions will not simply be functions that depend on X. They're going to be functions that depend on X and the smoothing kernel. And as he scaled his smoothing kernels in this particular way. So in n dimensions, you have to divide by 1 over epsilon to the n rather than 1 over epsilon, as I did in 1D. This is just to keep the integral of the thing constant as you vary things.
Could you tell us what qualifies as a smoothing kernel?
I'm going to. So when I was looking at the simplified algebra, the smoothing kernels were rapidly decreasing functions whose integrals were 1 and all of whose moments vanished. But now we're doing the full algebra. So this is how we're going to do the full algebra. So we're doing the smoothing, so this is just sort of warming up for it. We're doing the smoothing, but we're going to regard the right-hand side as a function of x and phi. So we're going to write capital F of phi and x to be that. Or if you've got an epsilon dependence in there, we're going to write it like this. So the basic space is maps from A cross Rn to R, such that if you fix the smoothing kernel, for a fixed smoothing kernel, it's a smooth function of X. We don't again require any topological restrictions as to how it behaves in this function space. And A is simply the subspace of functions of compact support now. We are now working with functions of compact support, such that their integral is 1. Turns out you can't do the full algebra without working in functions of compact support. So, rather than having a single A, we have a hierarchy of A. AQ are the one, so A naught is these ones where the integral is 1, and the AQ is the one who's up to the Qth moment vanishes. So again, I've just done this in 1D for convenience, but you can do it in Rn. And now, let's look at the null ones first. Let's look at moderate growth first. So you restrict a compact set. You choose any integer you like. That's going to tell you the degree of this differential operator d alpha of f. Then there exists some natural number such that for phi element of an, so you choose something whose first n moments vanish, they're constants such that for sufficiently small epsilon, this thing here blows up in the same way as it did before. Okay? So it's more or less the definition we had before, but you have to put in an extra thing that depends upon how many moments vanish. So the more moments vanish, the more restrictions you put on how this blows up. And you do a similar thing for these null functions here. So this C goes like epsilon for Q minus N means eventually this thing tends to zero. So you might have the first 100 moments not tending to zero, but eventually it tends to zero. Just a remark, in all the definitions, when one comes to null functions, I put in here derivatives. But actually, you can completely abandon any notion of derivatives. It doesn't make any difference. If you demand that, it actually amazingly implies that. Strange thing, that if you know it's moderate, and you know it's null for no derivatives, then it's actually null for every derivative. I found that quite surprising, but it's... So that's how you do it. So we know what moderate and null is, and then we just factor through. So it's a differential algebra satisfying all those things we had before. It's associative, it's commutative, it obeys the Leibniz rule, it commutes with embedding for smooth functions and all those kinds of things. And the smooth functions are subalgebra. And what's nice is you now have a canonical embedding. In fact, this is the embedding of distributions. So you've got a distribution T. You embed it as the equivalence class of the convolution of T with the smoothing kernel. Remember, an element of G depends on the smoothing kernel. So let's look at some examples of, I've called these non-linear generalized functions. So first of all, smooth functions, and just as we had before, it doesn't matter whether you embed them as constant functions or via a convolution, you get the same result. So that's nice. Now, what about someone's favorite distribution, delta function? See, there it is. Regarded as a generalized function, generalized delta function, you put in the convolution phi, you evaluate it at the point x, and you get 5 minus x. That's just the way it's done, because we did the convolution the wrong way round. If we'd done the convolution the right way round, this would have been 5 plus x. Well, what about the delta function squared? That's always a test for people who like to multiply. Well, that's dead easy, you see. That's a perfectly good smooth function. No problems. What about the exponential of the delta function? So h of phi x, well, that should be the exponential of 5 minus x. But, it's not an element of g, it's not of moderate growth, so that's, you can't exponentiate delta functions, but you can take polynomials of delta functions and things like that if you want to. Let me just remind you that the continuous functions aren't a subalgebra. So here's a nice little example. If I multiply these two functions together, the pointwise effect, you'd expect them to be zero, but actually, if you embed them and then multiply them, you don't get zero. But they are associated to zero. So they're not actually equal to zero. They are associated to zero. Now, actually, this has some quite nice features. So, for example, there's a difference in the Colombo setting between h and h squared, and h squared and h cubed, which there isn't when you just regard them. And there are lots of nice little formulae you'd like to differentiate h squared and say it's 2h h prime. But of course, you can't really do that. Actually, you can in the Colombo algebra. Gives you the right answer. So that's a nice little thing. So I think I should have something. I seem to have lost association. But you do association in exactly the same way as I did in simplified algebra. So that's, so far, that's what Colombo did. And that's attracted me to using Colombo algebras in general relativity.
So you had this example of this continuous but not smooth function.
Yes.
Supposing I just smooth it out.
Yes.
How does this, what changes in this? I mean, why does it change? I would like to understand how this differs.
Well, because if you smoothed it out in different ways, depending how So certain smoothings out would be equivalent as elements of the algebra, but other sorts of smoothings out would be different. So it's like a finer graining than you have in conventional distributions. So if you coarse grain Colombo algebras, you just get back ordinary distributions, but they have within them some sort of microscopic structure. Okay. So that it remembers that you've got something by squaring a Heaviside function. Because you see, if you take a Heaviside function and you smooth it, and then you square it, that actually is different from squaring the Heaviside function and then smoothing it. And the Colombo algebra sort of takes note of that and remembers it. But if you don't like that fact, you can get rid of it by working at the level of association. So this was another thing that you wanted. So these are Colombo algebras on manifolds.
Association is just embedding into the algebra.
Yeah, it's just as before. So you just look at the integral. You multiply the function by a test function. You integrate. And so the definition of G relies on the linear structure, first of all for the definition of these moments, and also for the embedding via convolution. So what we have to do is we have to replace these rather rigid smoothing kernels, which come from the Rn property, by two-point smoothing kernels. You see, you can't just look at x minus y, but you can look at two-point functions, which have certain epsilon dependence. I'll say more about this. And the other thing that you can do is you replace these AQMs by smoothing kernels which satisfy the moment condition asymptotically as epsilon goes to zero. Now what happens with these smoothing kernels is epsilon goes to zero, the support of these smoothing kernels gets shrunk. And because as epsilon goes to zero, the support is getting shrunk, you can more or less approximate the thing by Rn in a sufficiently small neighborhood. So as long as you... And there's a way you can do this in an invariant way, in a coordinate-free way, actually. And the other thing is you've got derivatives, and we just replace partial derivatives by Lie derivatives. That's the natural thing to do.
Lie derivatives with respect to smooth functions, or smooth vector fields.
So. Yes, Lie derivatives with respect to smooth vector fields. Turns out, actually, you can later allow something more general, but we'll stop. So, these are what we require of our smoothing kernels. So I've written them here as K sub X of epsilon. Okay. So, what you have here is these are n forms. So y is the variable in the n form, right? X is a parameter, and as epsilon tends to zero, the support of this thing is just coming in on the point. So as epsilon goes to zero, the support concentrates in on X. Okay? So you require that the support of these things tends to X as epsilon goes to zero. And you require these things to be, these are called delta nets of n forms, in the sense that the limit as epsilon goes to zero of f times one of these gives you the value of the function at x for smooth functions there. And that's just a sort of a mild condition on how this depends on epsilon, in fact. This is sort of putting a mild topological restriction on the epsilon dependence. Well, it's also saying that asymptotically you want the area of these things to be one as well. So there are two things that go into that last statement. Now, on Rn, the point of these moment conditions was precisely to have the condition that if you look at the smoothing of a, if you take a smooth function of compact support and you look at the convolution of it with a Q, then it has this order behavior. The formula that we did where we expanded in the Taylor series, remember that very first slide I showed you, you can just, that relied on the first n moments vanishing. And actually what we do is we define AQ to be the set of smoothing kernels that have precisely this behavior. And what you can show is that amounts to saying there exists a coordinate system in which the first Q moments vanish.
F tilde has an epsilon.
Yes, you're quite right. F tilde always has an epsilon. So we've got our smoothing kernels, and we can now define moderate and null. I thought I had those definitions, but somehow they're not here, but never mind. We can do them. And so what you get out of this, you get this thing, it's associative commutative algebra on which the Lie derivative is defined. Distributions are canonically embedded, as are smooth functions. For smooth functions, the Lie derivative commutes with the embedding. And so that basically means any calculations that you do before embedding for smooth functions are preserved after embedding. And there's really only one hard point, and it actually turns out to be a very hard point, which is to show that the definition of null and moderate are stable under the action of taking the Lie derivative. That turns out to be actually a rather difficult thing to prove, because you only have these asymptotic estimates. So that's how that works.
Are these vector fields of compact support also? With respect to which we take Lie derivative.
No, they can. Well, it doesn't really. No, they can be any old vector fields. Smooth. They're smooth.
But they could also be blowing up within asymptotically.
Yes, but your estimates are only ever on compact sets, so that doesn't make any difference. So this is it. The characterization is entirely local. It's always what these things look like on compact sets. Right. Generalized functions taking values in a manifold you didn't want to know about, so I'm just going to say, first of all, you do need them for differential geometry. You want to talk about geodesics, hypersurfaces, flows, all those kinds of things, you need them. It's completely impossible to do such a thing with ordinary distributions, because the notion of what's an ordinary distribution we take values in a manifold is dependent on the chart. Because it's sort of a linear definition. There's no way that can be preserved under nonlinear transformations of charts. Whereas that, it's actually easy to define these in the column-based setting. You just simply say that if you compose these objects with functions of compact support from the target space into R, they should be Colombo functions. But also, what turns out is by thinking carefully about how to define this, it also allows you to look at composition of generalized functions. And it tells you when they can be composed and so on. So that's quite important when it comes to looking at solutions for generalized geodesics, where you need to patch together local solutions into global solutions and things like that. What I want to talk about is the algebra of, you did want this, algebra of generalized tensor fields. Now, there's no real problem extending the simplified algebra to include generalized tensor fields. I don't want to go into all the definitions, but it's pretty obvious what they should be. However, there are some technical difficulties. In fact, so Michael Kunzinger and Roland Steinbaum have done this work with, have done lots of stuff on this. So it turns out, for example, what does it mean to talk about a generalized Riemannian metric? So it's a metric where you've got some epsilon dependence, and you actually need to understand that it's Riemannian, and it's what does that mean as epsilon goes to zero? So if you're just simply looking at, say, the determinant is non-zero or it's positive definite, it's not quite as easy as that, but you can do all the mathematics properly. However, the real problem with the simplified algebra is there's no canonical embedding of non-smooth tensors in this setting. And from my point of view, this completely rules it out as a useful tool in general relativity. Because you don't really want to be doing things that only work in special coordinates.
Why does it have with coordinates?
Sorry?
What does it have with coordinates?
What does it have to do with coordinates?
Well, smooth manifold, I don't have to worry about coordinates. I mean, it's tensor fields are just smooth in.
The way in which you can do an embedding, it goes back to Durham. So it's essentially the way in which Durham constructs currents. And the way Durham constructs currents is locally, and then he patches them together with a partition of unity. So he, as far as I remember, there's no canonical embedding. Now that doesn't mean to say it's never interesting. In fact, one place where it could be interesting is, for example, if you look at cosmic strings. I'm thinking of cosmic strings in the field theory setting. What you can do is you can look at the ratio of coupling constants in that, and as the appropriate ratio tends to zero, you get the strings get more and more concentrated as a line source. So that gives you a natural physical setting where you might want to use the simplified algebra. Okay, so you're using the coupling constants within the theory to construct your parameter epsilon, and that's automatically giving you an embedding. You're looking at the solutions, and they're parameterized by epsilon, and you can work with the simplified algebra. But in many cases, you just can't, there isn't a natural way of embedding a metric or a space-time into this setting. Now, one thing that you might think about doing is, suppose I've got a distributional vector field. So a distributional vector field is really just a vector field with distributional coefficients. So that's a classical result. So what I can do is I contract it with a smooth one form and I get a distribution. And you can embed a distribution in GM. So that gives you a way of saying, well, how about this? Suppose I take a frame and a dual co-frame. Then what I'm going to do is I'm going to look at the components of this vector field with respect to that frame. That just gets, you can do that by contracting with the co-frame. These are just some ordinary distributions. I embed them in the algebra this way, and I say they're the coefficients of EA. Well, that's a perfectly good embedding. You can do that. So that's sort of what I meant by saying it was coordinate dependent. That's the kind of thing you have to do. So it doesn't have to be coordinate dependent, but it depends on something. You see, this depends on the choice of frame. So you can't, that tells you, if you want to have something invariant, you can't embed component-wise. So, what do you do? What it turns out is you need some extra structure in order to do the embedding. And the sort of extra structure you need is something like a background connection. There are various different bits of extra structure you could use, but a background connection sort of is the bottom line as far as this is concerned. Now, the idea is this. These sets ux epsilon, that's the support of kx epsilon. As epsilon goes to zero, these things are shrinking. And you can make them shrink in some way that they don't get, you can insist that they don't get all sort of nasty, so you can put some topological conditions which ensure that eventually you get a convex neighbourhood like this. That's to say, there's a unique geodesic that takes you from this point X to some other point Y in the neighbourhood. And then what you're going to do is you're going to choose any old frame you like at this point X, and you transport it around within U using this connection. And you use this frame to define the embedding. Now, of course, you've got a choice of different frame X, but that's fine. That's exactly the linear result you want when it, because you want these things to linearly depend on the frame at X. See, the problem is, if you do it ordinarily, they linearly depend on the frame at Y, not at the point X, and that's no good to you. But this way, they depend on the frame at X. Now, we've got our usual problem here. The embedding depends on the background connection. In fact, there's a way of looking at this that really what you're doing is you're taking your functional smoothing kernel and you're using that together with the connection to construct a tensorial smoothing kernel. I could write down the formula. So really what you want to do is, as with the smoothing kernels, you make the connection an argument of the generalized tensor. So, it starts getting complicated. So this is your basic space. So they're generalized functions that depend on a smoothing kernel, a connection, and a point in the manifold. And they give you a T, they give you a tensor at the point X in the tensor space RS. And at this point, you do require smoothness with respect to all three arguments. Now, fortunately, all these spaces here, well, these two spaces are linear or affine spaces. They're affine spaces, in fact. And that means you can use what's called the calculus of convenient vector spaces to look at the notion of smoothness. So it's quite easy to talk about smoothness with respect to the smoothing kernel and connection. It's not a very hard thing to do, because if you've got a connection and another connection nearby, it just depends on a tensor field, and that's fine. So now what do we do for our moderate tensors? Well, you just do the obvious thing. It's exactly as it was before in the one when I was doing functions on manifolds. We've just inserted an additional argument, gamma. So you require that it's moderate for all choices of this background connection. Similarly for the null case. So it's just exactly the definition we had before, but you insert an additional argument.
One second.
Yes? So this is saying it, you smooth the thing, you take the derivatives, it blows up at worst like some inverse power of epsilon. Here it eventually goes to zero like some power of epsilon for sufficiently large AQ. Okay. All on compact sets. Now what do you get out of this? Well, you see, you get quite a nice theory. So, tensor product is fine. You can work out the tensor product via representation. So, you just do everything in the obvious way it works. The smooth tensors are subalgebra, distributional tensors are a linear space, embedding commutes with a generalized Lie derivative, a generalized metric can be used to define a generalized Lever-Chiavetta connection. So if you embed a metric, you can do all the constructions you like. And you can just define the curvature using representatives. So you just embed it, calculate the curvature, and that's the equivalence class of those is what you get. So you just, everything works out really quite nicely.
Can you talk about the signature of the metric?
Yes. Yes. You can talk about the signature of the metric. So this is one of the things that's slightly delicate, which I alluded to. That's all properly worked out. Now, what's the price you pay? The price you pay is you have to buy a horrible notion of association in terms of checking. See, what you do So here's my generalized tensor field. And what you do is these things here with tilde on their densities, their tensor densities that are the other way round. So you contract this with this. So this is, you take this object. This is the smooth version of the object. That's what this tilde on top means. So this is a smooth tensor field. You contract it with a tensor density with the indices the other way round. So this whole object here is a scalar density, and you integrate that scalar density and look at the limit as epsilon goes to zero. And that is supposed to be the same as this associated distribution acted on by the tensor density. Because the way I do it, distributional tensor fields are dual to tensor densities with the opposite weighting. That's the definition I use. So some, you can put the densities here or here, but I put them on the densities go with the test fields as far as I'm concerned. And then, if you've got a distributional tensor field and you tense it with a smooth tensor field, it doesn't matter if you do that before or after embedding. If you've got continuous tensor fields, you can tensor them before or after embedding and they're associated. So this is just exactly what you'd hope to get from the theory. I mean, this is as good as you can get. It's got more or less everything you want in it. But the question is, can you do anything with this bloody theory? Is it just so absolutely monstrously complicated, no one can calculate anything with it? Well, I'll try and persuade you that it's not quite the case. So first of all, let's look at a sanity check. Let's suppose you work with a C2 metric. C2 metric, remember, non-smooth. So you have to embed it via one of these convolutions. So what we do is we embed it via a convolution and we calculate the curvature. So G tilde is the embedded metric. You calculate its curvature. Right? And that is associated to this G. You could have calculated its curvature perfectly well. You'd have got something, again, non-smooth, so you can embed it. But notice here, these are not equal. They're only associated. And at first, that looks like a big disappointment. But actually, it's the thing that, in the end, makes the whole thing make sense physically, as I'll try and persuade you. So the next thing is, if you've got a C2 vacuum solution of Einstein's equation, then the Einstein tensor is associated to zero. Now, when you look at differential equations within the Colombo algebra, what you always do is you work with what Colombo called the coupled calculus. That is to say, you do your calculations within the Colombo algebra, but you only ever try and satisfy field equations at the level of association. Because somehow it's at the level of association that you're really starting to talk about the physics. Okay? Because the level of association is the level at which you're working with ordinary distributions, and somehow that ordinary distributions do, in a real sense, measure some sort of average property of these things. So, this is the appropriate distributional version of Einstein's equations. You're looking for generalized metrics, and typically these will be not distributional metrics. You'd be thinking here of functions of finite differentiability, let's say C1 metric or a continuous metric. You calculate its Einstein tensor within the Colombo algebra, and you say it's associated to some distributional energy momentum tensor. And that's the equation you want to look at. Now, that doesn't still tell you it's any good for anything, but I can do one calculation where this works. So, if I take the conical cosmic string metric, then it really is the case, in a coordinate independent way, working in this algebra, you can do all the calculations, that you do not get the delta function as the energy momentum tensor. But it is associated to the answer you usually see as the usual distributional energy momentum tensor of a cosmic string, where you have the stress equal to the density and delta functions on the axis. So you do get out that piece of physics. And I'm pretty clear, although I haven't done every bit of the calculation, that at least metrics that satisfy the Gerosch-Trashen conditions, this remains true. See, for Gerosch-Trashen metrics, you can calculate this object. So at least we're not doing worse than you would do using conventional distributions. So this is sort of reproducing conventional distributions. Now, I'm doing a calculation at the moment that actually if you look at L2, if you look at singularities which are L2 integrable, L2 1 integrable, so they have to be in a Sobolev space, then the same result goes through. So if the curvature, if the metric satisfies certain conditions and the curvature is L, so the metric has to be L2 2, the curvature L2, you get these sorts of conditions coming out. So there's a wider class of singularities for which you can do this. And you can develop some theorems that save you having to do it all barehandedly. I mean, you know, when you do it the first time, it's like when you do analysis for the first time, people are, you know, someone asks you to prove that x cubed is continuous using the basic definitions, is an absolute pig. But after a while you learn, well, if I look at products of continuous functions compose continuous functions, you get continuous. So you can develop the calculus of this stuff and do some things. I think I've run out of time, even though I didn't anywhere near get through all my topics, but I'm very happy to talk about other applications if people want to do that. Let me say the thing that I think is really bad in the theory at the moment is there are very few general theorems that say when a Colombo object is associated to classical distribution. That's the real stumbling block at the moment. So, for example, it's quite easy to write solutions of differential equations. You can actually solve Einstein's equations within the Colombo algebra, the initial value problem and stuff like that. And people who work in these Colombo algebras are sometimes quite entirely satisfied with that. But to me, if you want to make contact with physics, you want to say, well, what does this mean at the distributional level? And so you then, at the very end of doing all these calculations, you want to do that coarse graining and ask what it means distributionally. And that's where there aren't nice theorems. If you could provide nice theorems that told you when these Colombo objects were associated to distribution, I think it would be a very, very powerful thing that you could use in classical general relativity, because it's basically saying you do all these calculations behind the scenes and we know it doesn't really depend on how you did the smoothing in the end. That's basically, it's saying I'll do the calculations by smoothing, but at the end of the day I know the answer doesn't depend on quite how I did the smoothing. That's the sort of philosophy, if you can show the thing's associated. If you can't show it's associated, well, what do you know? So I'll stop there.